do your little bit of good where you are. It's those little bits of good put together that overwhelm the world. Desmond Tutu.
Partly the reason because of that is a lot of people who may look like me, I'm black, and a lot of the black communities and especially people I grew up with tend to stay away from the outdoors. And it's strange for me because that's all I've ever really known. And mostly the kind of synopsis of that is because they grew up in the cities and stuff like that. And going out and being adventurous is just, it's not a part of their life. They haven't experienced it, and they don't know the benefits of what tabbing to the top of a mountain, seeing the summit, and then getting that amazing view.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest who has and has not been on the podcast before. How is that possible? Well, we'll explain in just a little bit. Joining us from the UK this week is Dion, who has an incredible goal in front of him. Welcome back to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Dion. How's it going?
Hi, thank you, Doc. Yeah, it's going well today. I'm excited to see what we can get talking about.
Okay. Now, I know from our previous talk, I don't think that you've picked up a trail name. Trail names are a kind of a unique American long trail tradition. And I think we discussed this last time, but I just want to check in. Now, since last time we talked, has anybody given you a trail name out there?
Yes. So since your last podcast, I think that's what sparked the trail name for my immediate group where we go out on the hills together. And from that, Rory, who you know, in his spare time likes to edit photos of all the friends involved, maybe with like certain characters like the show Vikings or Friends or some sort of movie element. And for some reason, on a particular kind of trend he was doing, we were doing the Vikings style photos. And everyone else's looked really cool, really like as you would expect. And then mine just kept on coming out really, really dodgy to the point my eyes were not where they were supposed to be. And someone in the group chat just decided to say, oh, you look like Sid. And everyone was in stitches after that. And I kind of used it to my advantage. And everyone kept on calling me Sid through that. And I was just like, actually, I'll just use the negative with the positive. And I kind of named myself Sid or used that name for the trails, especially.
You leaned into it, embraced it.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Now, for our American listeners, you're going to have to fill us in on who is Sid?
Sid. So for you who may have kids or not, or grew up with the Ice Age franchise, Sid's the, I forget what animal he is, the sloth. Yeah, there we go.
Got it. Got it. It's not a UK thing. It's a movie thing. Got it.
Yeah.
That's okay. It. All right, Sid. So I'll go by Doc. You'll go by Sid during this episode.
I'm happy with that.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, you remember from last time, we've got a segment towards the end called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you and ask you for some trail wisdom, some kind of insight to share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Something new, I think, since the last time we talked is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Outdoor Vitals. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Sid, what is your must-bring piece of gear?
That is a tough question because I'm kind of a hoarder and like being comfortable out on the ground. So, but again, I do tend to travel light. It depends because I quite like the camping scenery at the moment. But at the same time, if it's just for a general hike, I would say a battery pack for sure. Just to keep the phone alive. You never know with emergencies. I tend to not pick up the phone if I'm out on the ground, but that's very helpful. But I love keeping my feet comfortable. So I would say it's got to be the right shoes for the occasion. Preferably Solomon's. It's a brand I'm used to. They are very good normally. Say my Garmin watch would be.
We're getting three must-bring pieces of gear. Fantastic.
That would be it.
Now, which model of the Garmin watch do you have?
I've got the Fenix 5 Sapphire, I think.
Nice. That is high quality right there. I've got the Instinct.
Hey, so. Rory's got the Instinct and it serves him well so far. So.
Okay. And back to your shoes comment, having the right shoes, that's important because if the feet aren't happy, ain't nobody happy.
No, it's going to be a miserable time for you.
That's right. That's right. Hey, I've got some questions I want to ask you. I call this my hiking poll, and it's not P-O-L-E, it's P-O-L-L, like a survey. I always make sure to explain that because I think it's very clever, and the guests, they never seem to react when I say that. My friends get a kick out of that. So I'm going to ask you, I've got 6 or 7 questions I want to ask you, and it's going to help me rate you on a scale of 1 to 100 on the crazy scale. So we're going to determine just how crazy you are, with 100 being completely sane and 1 being absolutely bonkers. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. When you're out there, trekking poles or no trekking poles?
No trekking poles.
No trekking poles.
Yeah, I like the human body is amazing, and when the feet get tired, it's just this. That's where I start testing myself and my abilities to carry on with the journey. So yeah, trekking poles. Maybe when I'm old and gray, but not just yet.
All right. Boots or trail runners?
Oh, boots all the way. I'm not quite a trail runner, so yeah.
Okay, so Solomon boots.
Yeah, Solomon boots or issued military, well, British military boots suffice. So, yeah.
Okay. Describe for us British military boots. Oh, he's going to show it for the viewers. That's right.
We have them right next to me. So these ones are old Bergs. They've got a solid sole. And they go quite high on the ankle, so you've got a lot of support there. They served me well for starters.
Those look pretty stylish, Sid. I mean, you could wear that out to the club on a Friday night.
I wouldn't wear them out clubbing. I know a few people might have been there too, who I work with, but they are very stylish. They're sleek as well, and they're quite lightweight, considering they're made of leather. So. Yeah, they do serve me well.
Okay. Tent, tarp, or hammock?
Ooh.
When you're out there overnight.
So I'm getting used to the tent, and with my military career, you tend to sleep under a tarp anyway. So either or, as long as it keeps you out of the elements, I'm not really fussed. I can sleep without anything really. Just depending on the elements and the weather conditions. But yeah.
So we call that cowboy camping. If you're just out there sleeping on the ground.
I freestyle all the way. See what happens.
All right. Hey, sleeping bag or quilt?
Ooh, sleeping bag.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you prefer synthetic or down?
Ooh, probably down. Okay. Probably down, but I'm still working it out. I'm testing and adjusting as we go through more colder climates in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got a pretty cold climb ahead of you.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's been okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get to that though. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, how about stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Ooh.
Are you familiar with those? Are you familiar with the latter two terms, cold soak or stoveless?
No, but I'm guessing one you eat cold, which I'm very much used to. Again, with the military, it's kind of quick, fast. We don't really have time to put things over a stove or any of that kind. But if I do have the pleasure to heat my food up, I'll use a jet boil all the way. And yeah, I'd rather heat hot food than the cold.
Okay, very good. Yeah, cold soak is, you have a jar and you fill it with water and you put your food in there and you put it back in your backpack and you let it soak while you hike, and then it's ready to go when you get to camp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then stoveless is just food that doesn't need to be cooked. You're eating tortillas and cheese and salami, that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah. So with the cold soak, which was, I would probably say vegan gummies and stuff like that, just to keep the sugars going. I'll definitely use those, but nothing as extravagant as tortillas or any of that matter.
Now you said vegan gummies. Are you vegan?
I'm not vegan, but Rory, who you very well know, he's vegan. He's very strong rooted in the vegan culture. I'm working my way there, but if it helps, I'll try to eat veggie or less meat from time to time, depending. I'll just see what my body says to me. But
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, hey, we've got three long trails in the U.S. We've got the Pacific Crest Trail, which goes from Mexico to Canada. We've got the Continental Divide Trail, which goes from Mexico to Canada. And we've got the AT, the Appalachian Trail, which goes from Georgia to Maine, all over 2,000 miles. And they run north to south. And so this question is, the long trails, should they be hiked northbound or southbound?
Ooh. See, my take on it is, what's the outcome? What's the finishing product of what you're trying to achieve? If you're wanting to go out to camp and stay out I don't know. That's a tough one, but I'm going to go south because I'm from the south. So we'll just say go southbound.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And is trail life better above the tree line or below the tree line?
Ooh, above.
Above.
Above all the time. Yeah. The views, everything.
Okay. All right. Let me do some quick calculations here. We're going to carry the 3, divide by 2, multiply by pi, comes out to a solid 71. I had to deduct some points for no trekking poles and boots over trail runners, but some very interesting answers. So you can get yourself a hat. You can embroider it with the number 71 on it, and that'll be a token of the hiking pole.
I'm happy with that.
Okay. All right. Hey, let's back up a little bit before we get too far down the trail. Let's talk about where you grew up, your background, what kinds of sports and hobbies you were involved in, and maybe you've already mentioned some military experience. So mm-hmm. Talk to us about some of that.
So my background, I'd like to start like just family in general. It was quite a laid back kind of environment. It was a decent upbringing, but again, due to certain aspects like racism and everything else, I did go through like a massive dip at a young age with depression and all the rest of it. But any time that I kind of went on holiday with my parents or to the coast, I would always be like, right, let me climb those rocks. Let me just explore my own surroundings kind of thing. And I would be allowed to go ahead and wander the landscape kind of thing. So that was good. And from a young age, I realized that nature and well-being intertwine, so to speak. So I was very much a happy child when I was exploring. Leading on down to the military side of things, it kind of took precedent after making a few mistakes along my journey of life. And I just wanted to make that big change, that big sacrifice, and kind of test my capabilities with joining the military. I knew it was going to be horrendous at times, testing, challenging. But again, I'm pretty, I like a challenge. So that was my challenge. At the age of 24, I joined. And it was almost therapeutic in a sense of I was constantly dealing with these problems, e.g. waking up really early and getting told to like stay in a sit-up position for a long period of time, or get thrashed, not have time to eat, all these elements where I was kind of used to growing up, because I would always stay out late or cause little bits of drama with my peers. And I was able to realize that I'm good at the particular kind of, we call it green stuff. So when you're out in the fields, you're getting down dirty, you're doing training cereals and stuff like that. And a lot of the time in the UK, especially in some of the areas like Brecon or Salisbury Plain and stuff like that, which are training areas, they get very cold and wet and windy most of the time. And you see a lot of miserable faces when you're under a tarp or in a deep hole, which you dug hours before. Seeing the upset faces kind of lit me up. I'm quite dark like that. So it made me realize, okay, so I can deal with the elements. I can deal with the testing environment, and I'm also learning new skills along the way. And moving down 7 years now, I've served, and I've just got this incredible sense of wanting to use my skills and learn new skills as well for the outdoors, and be able to invest my time into inspiring others. Partly the reason because of that is a lot of people who may look like me, I'm black, and a lot of the black communities and especially people I grew up with tend to stay away from the outdoors, and it's strange for me because that's all I've ever really known. And mostly the kind of synopsis of that is because they grew up in the cities and stuff like that. And going out and being adventurous is just, it's not a part of their life. They haven't experienced it, and they don't know the benefits of what tabbing to the top of a mountain, seeing the summit, and then getting that amazing view, and taking it in, and spending time with your own thoughts. And I think that's partly because they grew up in the machine, I call it, because you're struggling with everyday kind of consequences of going to work, going to school, having to provide for others, and it gets a bit busy, and being able to step away from that and go out your way to travel and experience the hills was a big impact for me coming from that life of being in that machine, seeing buildings left and right everywhere, and getting caught up in that kind of civilization. My passion really has always been surrounded by helping others. And now I genuinely feel like I've got something I'm good at, and I can utilize this by providing a service for others. That hasn't come yet, but the stepping stones leading to that are very much on the way, which I'm sure some people will appreciate, hopefully.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. You know, I really appreciate you, Sid, because you know, we've talked to a number of people who have stories very similar to yours that, you know, they don't look like the rest of the people out there on the trail, and they are doing their best to promote on, you know, social media and podcasts and trying to get the message out there that the, you know, public lands are for the public, and the public consists of all of us, everybody. It's not just one ethnic group or one gender or one socioeconomic, you know, background. It is for everybody. And I think, you know, the trail is a great equalizer, and it puts everybody on the same playing field, and you get the same benefits out of interacting with nature. So
yeah, nature doesn't discriminate is right. A big thing to me. And it, unfortunately, it took one of my close friends to kind of say to me, you never really see black people. Like to me, I don't really see color. I don't look into that side of life too much. But it took my friend to say, you're probably the one black person I see on the mountains every time we go out. And him saying that impacted a kind of overwhelming sense of actually, yeah, and as a people, we're very grounded in nature. Like we're very natural kind of people. And it upsets me to see that not many people are utilizing the outdoor experience, no matter what that could be. It could be skiing, it could be walking, it could be taking a dog for a walk, anything, but utilizing it and taking up that time to kind of regenerate yourself and your mental state. It's sort of pressing the restart button. And you're right, the demographic, what you see out on the mountains is very much not people who look like me, unfortunately. But I will add, since I've started my journey into what we'll be talking about, I'm sure in a moment, is I've been going on Instagram, social media, and I'm coming across these other kind of units of people where they are black or African American or whatever they are, but there's a lot of them out there, and it is they're doing something very good for the community. And I just feel like I have my own outtake on what we're doing. And it's just very good to see.
Absolutely. Now you mentioned the, how did you describe it? Growing up in the machine. I think that is a great description, because as you said, you know, when we're out in nature, we feel that connection. We come from nature. You know, that's what really restores us and regenerates. And yet we have big segments of our population that grow up in city centers, surrounded by, you know, asphalt and cement and buildings, and don't ever interact with nature and don't have that connection and are shielded from it. And that is to their detriment.
Yeah, definitely. Because you saying that has just sparked another saying, which I might use in future for myself. But nature, being out in nature is kind of your soul's way of looking in the mirror, because every time, no matter what dramas you have in your head, it could be bills, it could be family troubles, it could be anything. You've lost your job. Take yourself out for a walk. Go to, I would say, ideally a mountain range where the views are just phenomenal. And you get that chance to have a conversation with yourself in a way where you wouldn't in the machine. You might kind of ask yourself how to deal with a certain problem, like your bills, and that just stresses you out more. But when you are able to press the restart button and have that therapeutic moment with yourself to connect with nature as well, it's quite a powerful thing. And I think everyone needs to utilize it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had an interesting discussion the other day with a guest about control and how much control we have in our lives. And we disagreed a bit, because I suggested that we have less control when we're in the machine. You know, we've got so many things pulling at us, you know, appointments, phone calls, social media, family gatherings, you know, whatever it may be. We've got a lot of stuff pulling at us. And when my point is, when we're out in nature, you know, we kind of have a lot more control his position was that all it takes is one wrong step, hailstorm, you know, and you're not in control. Mother Nature's in control out there. So what's your perspective?
I'm definitely going to agree with you. And I'm sorry, but your friend is definitely wrong. just because it's in our DNA to be with nature. The matter of fact of being unprepared for a certain trek or hike, it's all a process of learning at the end of the day. And if I haven't brought the right equipment, I'm going to learn how to deal with what I've got, and I'm going to try to find the shelter, the right means to get me out of harm's way. Where in the machine, you're around danger all the time. You could cross the road at the wrong time, like a drink driver could go down the road and something happens, to say the least. But I don't agree with your friend.
All right, so sorry, plug it in. Sid agrees with me, not you. Very good. And one last thing about what you said earlier about military service. You know, here in the U.S., we have multiple branches of the military. We've got the Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, mm-hmm. similar branches over in the U.K., I imagine. And which branch did you belong to?
So I'm in the Army, always been in the Army. My role within the Army is I'm a supply specialist in the Logistics Corps, Royal Logistics Corps, sorry. And in a nutshell, we deliver the right kit at the right time to the right people. And that's my job role. It's not for everyone, but that's why you've got a plethora of job roles in there. And I'm proud to be serving in Her Majesty's service, I suppose. Yeah.
You are still serving.
Yes, I'm still serving. So it takes up most of my time. Hence why I'm not always out in the mountains as much as I should be.
Right. Logistics, so important for any organization. It's a very important job. Getting the right stuff to the right people at the right time is a perfect way to put it.
Yeah. 100%.
Okay. So let's talk about how you were on the podcast and not on the podcast before. That seems a little bit confusing.
It is. It was an amazing conversation we had. And if I remember correctly, it was me and Rory having the conversation with you. It was a rough time because this time last year is when our dear friend passed away. And it was around that time we had the pod. And for us, we just felt it was probably the sensible direction to not put the podcast out there just because of the people involved. It's a very sensitive subject for all of us. And it might have caused a few disagreements or whatever at that moment of time. But now I'm pretty sure that if Rory is happy as well, which I'm sure he would be, we'll restart that button and put ourselves on the pod again. And have a different chat, hopefully a more positive one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great episode, and sorry it didn't run, but I totally get it, totally understand a difficult situation. And it was, you know, our conversation last time really focused on Beyond Six primarily. Mm-hmm. And would you care to explain what Beyond Six is?
Yeah, no problem. So Beyond Six, the history of Beyond Six is just to do with it was a group of friends banding together. And just going out on the mountains and having those chats where you wouldn't really have on the phone, or if you did, it'd just be there wouldn't be much emotion to it. But we're all people who, well, everyone deals with mental health, and one of the reasons we kept meeting up in these circumstances was to help us utilize the benefits of the outdoors. And as time went by, and we saw an opportunity and kind of the gap or the need, the want from other people to get outdoors with experienced walkers, and be able to have that open forum between people with no judgment, and also have a great office like the outdoors to have those conversations and to get things off your chest. And the more people what kept meeting up with us and the group, it wasn't really an organized event. It was like, okay, we're going to be here at this time, come with us if you want to. And we started seeing people turn up to these things. And there was a few instances where people would actually open up quite deeply to us. And at the end of these events, we felt quite humbled by the fact that people were openly like expressing their feelings and their emotions. And then push come to shove, due to a passing of a good friend, Mick, last year, that took a knock to everyone, which you could imagine. But we found that the passion still stayed between the group, and me and Rory, Lauren, who you haven't spoken to yet, but she is a director of Beyond Six now. We sat down with each other and we kind of made a promise and came to an agreement that we could help people here, and we needed to, because unfortunately we wasn't quite able to do that for our own circle, but we wanted to do stuff for others as much as we can. So Beyond Six became a community interest company, which, looking at it in a business format, it is one down from a charity. So there's certain obligations where we have to right. give back to that community that we're serving. And now what we do, we use our experience and our passions and our enjoyment for the outdoors to help people's mental health. Still have that open forum to conversate with people, and our main effort is suicide awareness. Mm-hmm. In fairness, and how we do that is just with utilizing outdoors, creating people's experiences. Mm-hmm. They can contact us as well for their own personal challenges. Just for an example, Rory done the 100K, which you've spoken to him about on the previous time speaking with him, which was a phenomenal kind of experience, everyone in the group. But yeah, so we've done 100K in 24 hours, which he smashed. And we're kind of rooted in those challenges, and they bring out like the human side of who we really are and what we're able to achieve and the reasons why we want to achieve them. And because of us doing the challenges, we want other people to enjoy their challenges, and we can plan for them, we can provide equipment for them and the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But to cut a long story short, Beyond Six is embedded in the outdoors, and we utilize the outdoors to bring a good experience, a good day, or an expedition, which we're slowly building, to benefit mental health in a very positive way with the right people around you.
Right, addressing those mental health issues through nature, through being outside. And Beyond Six, it stems from the title stems from a military kind of concept. Yes. Where correct me if I'm wrong here, Sid, but if you are standing, say, on the face of a clock, right, and you're mm-hmm. describing directions to others that you're interacting with, you know, noon or 12 would be straight ahead. Mm-hmm. 9 o'clock would be off to your left. 3 o'clock would be off to your right. And then behind you is 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And so when people say in military service, I've got your six, They say they've got your back. You know, you can't see behind you. And so these people, when you say I've got your six, they've got your back. They're going to watch out for you. They're going to protect you, take care of you. So no one can sneak up on you. And so beyond six is a play on that concept.
It is. And I might not do the explanation justice because unfortunately I wasn't the one who made or came up with the idea of the name, but I'll try to do it as much justice as I can. Going beyond six is using that same analogy of your back being your six, and going beyond it means you're going past your past and seeing the future and going that extra mile in whatever adversities you may face. And that is what, as a group, that's what we have done. And as individuals, we want to see people achieve and go beyond what is behind them, whatever baggage they're carrying, whatever it may be. Leave it there or take it with you, but we've got your back and we're going to take you across that line and go beyond.
Sid, I think that was a solid explanation. Well done, sir.
I hope so.
All right. Hey, before we go to break, let's also touch on 520, because I know that was something you were involved in earlier. Are you still, I'm assuming you are, because that's your Instagram handle still. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about 520.
So 520, again, is a military kind of term, which I'll go into in a moment. But as the kind of journey I went on, or still am pursuing with 520, is again to help people through my ways of being able to provide a service. We sold coffee, we sold t-shirts, we sold other kinds of apparel, and through that it was generating a platform for then other service members and civilian members to come together and show that they support each other. That was kind of the 520 motto. But then what I wanted to achieve and will still achieve through whatever I do in the future is have a mental health hub where it's not you come here, you speak to a psychiatrist or anything like that, which I hope there would be a time and place for that, but it would be more of a coffee shop idea. You come in, you chat, you have your brew. We could do events there and it's just a safe space for people who may be suffering or may not be suffering, just a nice place for people to come to and provide a service. And with that kind of idea, it was always going to evolve and is evolving now, where I've kind of put a thumbtack in it, as you may see on Instagram and stuff like that, but the handle is still 520. That was a decision on my part to say, look, I'm not going to leave this and forget about that journey. I'm going to take a new trail, so to speak, and go the path what is kind of flowing through me right now to be able to then take a circle back and then come pick that up and then carry on. So yeah, I've got a mission now, which is still rooted in inspiring others and helping out people. And hopefully I can do both of those things in the future.
Sid, that is the perfect place to take a break, because when we come back from the break, we are going to talk about that new mission. So Okay. Stay tuned for that. We'll be right back. From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going. knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. The John Freakin' Muir Pod is sponsored by Outdoor Vitals, the ultralight backpacking gear company whose mission is to improve the mental, physical, and emotional health of mankind by facilitating impactful outdoor experiences. Outdoor Vitals creates innovative technical products with confidence-inspiring education that empower outdoor ultralight adventurers. Their focus on performance enables you to live ultralight with gear you can actually be confident with. Whether you're looking for an ultralight sleep system, shelter, or pack, or if you're looking for top quality apparel for the trail, you can find it at Outdoor Vitals. Do yourself a favor. Live ultra light. And welcome back. We are talking to Sid, and we've teased it a couple times in the previous segment. He has a new mission, a huge mission, and I'm really excited to talk to him about this. So, Sid, tell us what's going on these days with you.
Yeah, Doc, thank you. So the beginning of this year or last year, it was a discussion of mine where I would want to complete certain crazy mountains. And within the group, I was speaking to Mick, and he wanted to do Kilimanjaro, I wanted to do Everest, and we kind of arranged a plan to do so. Unfortunately, Mick isn't with us no more, but I feel like he's with me all the time, and because of that, it's given me a crazy drive to kind of achieve the unachievable, or what I thought was unachievable, which is climbing Everest. I want to do it. It's always been in the back of my mind to do something like that, of that magnitude, and I've always liked those kind of, the ideas of those challenges for me sit very deeply within me. And when I was looking into it, again, going back to Black people and that the culture of Black people not really going out to the mountains or these extreme climates was just a very unsettling feeling for me, because I know we're very strong people, and we're able to do tremendous things, and I feel like it's my duty to kind of go, right, see the tallest mountain in the world, we can do that. Because looking into all the facts about who's climbed and the rest of it, there's only been 10 Black people who've even summited Everest out of the tens of thousands who have achieved to summit successfully. And just that figure alone, statistically wise, it blows my mind, and it's given me the right drive to say I'm going to achieve that unachievable thing.
More people have walked on the moon.
Exactly.
Right? That's crazy.
So yeah, the comparisons are kind of shocking in a way when it's free. Well, I say nature is free. Everest now is not so much. but yeah, so that was a kind of penny drop for me. I started thinking about it to extreme lengths, to the point I was having dreams of being on top of Everest. And as this was happening, Nims's Netflix show came out, and the documentary.
Yeah, 14 Peaks.
And that, seeing that man achieve such a unforgiving task, it blew me away. And the visuals to that kind of,
yeah,
it really sunk home. I was watching it with my partner, and it's going to sound silly, but I almost had a tear in my eye, because it was just like, I need to get there, right? I need to, not just for myself, but I need to see more people like me, even if they're not black, but people who have struggled like me or anything. Mm-hmm. Just not to make it a tourist attraction, as it is very much is one at the moment. But the inspiration behind it and doing amazing expeditions and stuff like that, which I've still got a lot to learn about.
Yeah. And for our listeners out there who may not have seen 14 Peaks or don't know what 14 Peaks is about, there are 14 peaks above 8,000 meters. And this film documents the attempt of Nimzies to summit all 14 of those in the shortest amount of time. I think he did it in 7 months.
7 months. Yeah.
7 months. That is crazy. And you know, you always hear about the explorers, and walking side by side and supporting those explorers, especially on those high peaks, are Sherpas. And oftentimes, you know, the story of the Sherpas is untold. And this is a group that Nimzies put together. Nimzies is from Nepal, and he wanted to do this, and it kind of demonstrates or draws attention to that fact that, you know, here is a person of color going up and doing just fantastic things, unbelievable things.
Yeah.
Seemingly unaccomplishable. Yeah, that's even a word, unaccomplishable things.
Everyone told him he couldn't do it.
Right.
And guess what? He's done it. And that really and truly, that is what made me go, right, I can do it. And again, with the culture behind climbing Everest or the Himalayas itself, it is the Sherpas what get you up there, and, mm-hmm. and how he portrayed that and what he's done for that community itself is I take my hat off to him every time, because a lot of Westerners will go there, spend their money, expect so much from these people, and the respect I don't think is paid to the amount that it should be, if you know what I mean. So showing the culture of Nepal and the people what get you up mm-hmm. like amazing mountains and sacrifice their life and their families and everything to put you up onto the summits is something also where I feel like I would want to do with my expedition or future expedition to bring that all to light. Because me as a Westerner, I don't want to step into another person's playground to say, and just go there, not experience the culture, not talk to people, not bring something back as well. Because my experience will hopefully lead to me being able to pass that on to younger generations and inspire those people who might not know so much about the Himalayas, Nepal, and the rest of it. So, yeah.
Yes. Now, you mentioned earlier that 10 Black people have been to the top of Everest. Were those 10 from the US?
No. So, some of them have been from Africa. I can't remember where. I've been reading up on a few stories. Some have been British, or one or two have been British, mm-hmm. and the rest have been American or African-American. And so they have been dotted around the place, but it's just that small number where it's like we could all go there in theory. But there is a group where I've been looking into and speaking to as well, called Full Circle, and they're going to be the first all black team from all parts of the world who are going to attempt to summit Mount Everest this year, which again that blew me away, and it's seeing people like me take what passions they have together and come bring that together and make a historical moment for black people in general. If they are listening, I would like to join you on your attempt to Everest.
Let's get Sid into Full Circle. Let's go.
But
Now,
yeah.
you mentioned nature's free, but certainly climbing to the top of Everest is not. Do you have any idea, concept of what it might cost to get you there?
So because of my position, I've kind of had to draft up two expenses, kind of, what do you call them? Expense.
Budget.
Formats or whatever. Budgets. There we go.
Budgets. There you go.
And because of the military, if I'm able to get it greenlit through the military, it will be a case of around 35 grand in pounds to make it happen. With that, I would need to put a team of military serving people to make that team and hopefully reach the summit, with a lot of training involved as well prior. When I did make this decision to summit Mount Everest, it was very much an individual kind of mission for myself to go ahead and do. And with that, I started a fundraising page, and looking at the budget as well, it'd be around £90,000 for what I want to achieve, with the best expedition team leading me up that mountain, preferably people with a good amount of experience to get me back home to my missus and my child and stuff like that. So so £90,000 seems around the ballpark figure of what I'd need to achieve to get the permits, to get the training involved as well. So and pay for the expedition teams, the food, the gas, the gas you need to breathe in the death zone, and all the rest of it, which sounds a lot, but for what it's going towards is actually quite little, I would say, in this climate today.
So you're gonna use oxygen up there?
I would.
I'm just kidding.
I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy.
There you go.
And I hate the cold, surprisingly enough. So I'm gonna be in a bad way probably up there. But
so you like to breathe and you hate the cold, but you're going to Everest anyway.
Yeah, no, that's it. You've got to go beyond six, haven't you? So
that's right.
Go beyond the boundaries of people's limitations and their ideas and concepts. If the training goes well and I get the green light, as if my cardiovascular is good and everything else, I might throw another spanner in the works in regards to the oxygen side of things. But more than likely, I'll take a few tanks with me.
Smart man. Now, after you do this, because I know you're going to do this, after you do this, you have to come back on the pod and tell us about the experience.
100%. I'll be ready. I'll even do it at the top of summit
if I
spare 5 minutes. yeah, so, I'll definitely enjoy that.
Good, good. Hey, a little brief shout out. If you were to come do that, you'd be the second person that I would talk to who had been on the top of Everest. I had the chance to talk to Eric Larson last year, who is the only human being in the history of the planet. Think of how many people that is. The only human being on the history of the planet, that's a lot of people, to have gone to the South Pole, the North Pole, and the top of Everest in one calendar year. That's crazy.
That's something else. But again, you saying that, these are the kind of goals that I want to lean towards in the future. I do. Everest is just a start. Let's just say that.
Yeah, they refer to Everest as the third pole sometimes, mm-hmm. just because it is, you know, it's the highest point on the planet.
Yeah.
And so he did all three poles in 1 year. So kudos mm-hmm. to him. All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I mean, from where we are today to you standing on top of that mountain, I mean, there's a lot, not only fundraising, but there's a lot of preparation that has to go into this. What kinds of things are you doing to train yourself for this?
So bringing it back a little bit. So the project I've put in place to the whole journey of me from start to finish being at the summit of Everest, well, hopefully coming back down to base camp as well, I've kind of gave it a name, True North Project, which again, True North is a thing what sits with me because I used to say, find your True North.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people in the world, pretty much everyone sees North as up and being the highest point in the world. That to me is about as high as you can go with still being on the ground, so to speak. And finding your true north is a kind of motto I say to people when they're a bit lost or they don't know what to do and the uncertainties behind it.
Yeah, it's kind of finding your purpose, right? Yeah. Finding your purpose, following your heart. Absolutely. Find, yeah.
What's true to you, mm-hmm. and don't get caught up with other people's ideologies, right. and do right by you, which I'm slowly trying to achieve myself. So the True North Project, that's where it's come from. And with that, I'm putting in place a number of evolving challenges, which will help me benefit for physical, mental, and the resilient side of it to get me to that summit. One of which is I've named the 12 in 4 challenge, which what it will be is the 12 tallest mountains in Wales, Snowdonia. The route I have mapped out for that challenge equates to the elevation of Mount Everest, 8,848 meters. So that challenge is designed to go say to myself, because it's something I haven't done before, and say, right, I'm able to do the elevation. I'm able to probably deal with some of the strenuous weather conditions in England where I'll be doing it. The weather system has a mind of its own. So hopefully I get a bit of snow, wind, rain, all the rest of it. Obviously it won't be half as bad as what Everest would be at climbing that. But that is the first stage of the challenge. And I plan to do all 12 mountains just in 4 days. If I can do it beforehand, that's fine. But 4 days is my window, just to replicate kind of the steps between base camps when climbing mm-hmm. Everest. It's roughly, for the average climber, around 4 to 3 days going up. So
mm-hmm.
So that is my kind of first take on what I would do to prepare. The rest of it would come along with doing National Three Peaks Challenge, which I'm planning to do with a few colleagues of mine next month, where the National Three Peaks, if you haven't heard of it, is Ben Nevis in Scotland, Fort William, Scafell Pike in the Lake District, and then Mount Snowdon in Snowdonia. So that would also be one of the mountains I would do on the 12 and 4. So I think for what I'm able to do and put out there for training purposes, baseline is just do as many of those kind of challenges as I can. The rest would come with funding and the rest of it, just due to what processes I need to go down, like the high altitude training, going to other high altitude climates and getting those bits of training in, which unfortunately cost money.
So, yeah, Sid, I was going to put this out there. I know this is going to cost money. My suggestion is going to cost money, and it's also going to take some time, because you know you're currently in service, you're currently in the military service, and so it requires some time off and some transportation issues. But I think you kind of shared that story earlier, where you and Mick had kind of had these goals, he with Kilimanjaro and you with Everest. I think a fantastic homage to Mick and a great training for you would be to do Kilimanjaro.
That's you know what, saying that was going to be one of the ideas around it, but again, with the money behind it and the time and the rest of it, to make things achievable, I have to let time be my friend, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And with that, it, whatever kind of props up and becomes an opportunity, I'll gladly make it happen. So if Kilimanjaro is possible, I'm definitely going to go ahead and do it. And hopefully you'll see me in the next year or two with a few pictures on top of Kilimanjaro.
Okay. So what is the timeline? What is the date or the year that you'd like to be on top of Everest?
2026 will be a realistic outcome. I wanted it to be in 2025 just because I'm quite an eager beaver and I like to get things done as soon as possible. As soon as that kind of penny drops, I like to crack on and get busy. But due to obviously military limitations on leave and the money side of things, it's giving me a good window to get all those effects in order. So 2026, I'm making sure that I get to at least Nepal, and then we'll see if I summit Everest or not in the meantime. Yeah.
Okay. And do you have a fundraising strategy to kind of raise money for your training hikes as well as your big trip?
Yeah, with that, Doc, would be the 12 and 4 and the other challenges what come along with it. And generally everything surrounding the True North Project. You can have a look at the website, which is truenorthproject.co.uk, where most of my information, if not all the information, when I can put it on there, provides everything with someone who's interested in potentially either sponsoring what the mission is. And if they need to, they can email me for more information with that. But I've got a fundraising page on gofundme.com, which again, the link's in the website. So the website's probably the best place to go, or the Instagram account, 520. But in regards to actual fundraising efforts, it's all going to be embedded with what challenges I do and making some sort of impossible challenges along the way as well. Will see me fundraising for this endeavor, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's a big mountain in front of you, both metaphorically and literally. And we wish you the very best of luck. I know you are a driven man, and you are taking this on with purpose, and know you're going to do it. So good luck, buddy.
I appreciate that. No, definitely. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, you know where we are, Sid?
Go on.
We are at that time of the episode where I ask you for your pro tip insight of the week. What bit of trail wisdom, outdoor adventure wisdom, can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better?
Don't get lost. No, I'm joking. Well, actually, no, saying that, don't get lost is probably the perfect way of putting it, is be prepared before you do any kind of walking, hill walking, trekking, through trekking, any kind of expedition you've got going on. Make sure you plan correctly. You get the map of the area you're going to. You put your checkpoints in place. You put your emergency kind of details there. Find the nearest hospital. Trust me, it sounds crazy, but find the nearest hospital, because you might need to phone them and you don't want to be waiting long if anything does go wrong. But step aside from thinking about the worst, and when you plan a route, it gives you the ability to see what's on the map, and then when you come across it, you're like, oh, I know that. We're only, let's say, 100 meters around the corner from where we need to go to pitch a tent or anything like that. So yeah, I would say bring in your map, compass, and letting people know where you're going, where you're staying is the best thing, I would say, not to get lost and enjoy your adventure.
Well said, Sid. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Sid. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Sid, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
You can find me on 5_ you can find me on Instagram at 5_20 and then _.
That's complicated, Sid.
I should have thought about it before I put it out there. But yeah, just type in the number 5 and 20 and I'm pretty sure you'll discover me on there. And again, to find all my latest kind of adventures, my updates on my progress to Everest, and getting this all the challenges out of the way, you can come on the website and visit www.truenorthproject.co.uk, and that is probably the best way to find me.
Okay, remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com. Sid, we're also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of adventure media to keep our listeners connected to the outdoors. We call this our adventure media recommendation. What do you have for us?
Oh, I'm going to say 100% buy yourself Nimsdai's book for Project Possible. It's phenomenal, and to be fair, I read it every day, and it makes my mission feel so much more accessible. So for anyone who needs a good read or a kick up the butt to get your travels sorted and achievable, read that book, and I'm sure it'll push you over that line.
Yeah, Project Possible. And I love that because they all told him that what he wanted to do was impossible. And so he went ahead and named the project Project Possible.
Yeah, amazing.
It's all about your mindset.
It is. And I'm not a professional. I'm not as experienced as many others out there. But I'm only just discovering what you say and put into the world can become reality, and slowly but surely Everest will be my reality for sure.
That's right. I mean, when you speak it into existence, when you publish it somehow, whether it's, you know, telling people or creating a website or going on a podcast, I mean, now it's out in the world, and
exactly.
you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. So
No, I will not back down from this until I get there, no matter how long it takes. It will happen.
Okay. Hey, and before we wrap things up, Sid, I've got one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?
To be fair, Doc, you've done really well, and I've probably not done the best as I should to explain or whatnot, but I think we've hit the nail on the head. Ultimately.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, that's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Sid?
You know what? I'll shout out Beyond Six, because as much as I'm a director of it, it does its own thing. The supporters of Beyond Six, the community around it, thank you very much. Can't do it without you. Rory, Lauren, Husey, Joe, Mick, Dave, Ben, Michelle, who else? Chris, everyone who I know in my circle. Like, yeah, I can't do this journey without them. So, and my girlfriend, my missus.
Oh, good save there.
So, yeah, no, she's, you know what, as much as I left her till last, she's been my rock for ever since I've known her. So she's amazing, and I wouldn't be where I am without her. So yeah,
fantastic. And tell Rory he needs to work on his photo editing skills so your eyes don't look wonky.
I tell him every day and he still hasn't made it any better. Somehow it gets worse. I'll have to show you some of the photos.
You're gonna have to share those with us. Yes.
Yeah, we'll do.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. Doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.